Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spiritual Insights with Charlotte Spicer. Spirituality and Metaphysics Talk Radio, featuring A Course in Miracles, Dream Interpretation, Guided Meditation, and the Psychic and Metaphysics Free-for-All. It's your opportunity to consult with a professional psychic medium, discuss past lives, the chakras, and more. We are non-denominational, and there are no limits. Want to change your life? You must first change your mind. 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 No matter your religious structure, cultivate peace in your reality through self-awareness with an authentic spiritual teacher. And now, your host, Charlotte Spicer.
Well, hello everyone. Thank you for joining us for this very special broadcast. Are you or a loved one caring for someone with Alzheimer's? Well, we have a very special guest today who has written an extremely inspiring book to help you cope. We have Dr. Norris Lee Roberts Jr. here, a very accomplished professional, holds numerous degrees, too many to name to be honest, but he has written a very special book called Mama is Still Here, A Mother and Son's Love Passage Through Alzheimer's Disease. This is an inspirational tribute to his mom and a guide for anyone who finds themselves in a similar situation. Welcome to the show. We're going to refer to him as Dr. Norris. So Dr. Norris, welcome, welcome. Dr. Norris, welcome to the show. Sorry, I just had a little technical glitch there.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Charlotte.
You're welcome. I appreciate you spending time with us and helping us learn more about this disease. I love the title. I'd like to start with the title, Mama is Still Here. How did you come up with the title? What inspired that?
Actually, it was Thanksgiving Day, and my mother, we were about to have Thanksgiving dinner. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I were sitting down with my mother, and we were just talking, and we were like holding her arms around her, mm-hmm. and we were just talking about what her day was like and about Thanksgiving. And then she just kind of just had this burst of energy, and she just kind of stood up and just said, "Mama is still here." And that's why I knew, aha, that's the name of the book, Mama is Still Here. She actually is a person that actually really named the book. And she kind of circled the room, dancing around the room, saying, Mama's still here. And after that, she said, let's go eat. And that's what we did.
Okay. It must be so hard. You know, I don't know a whole lot about it, so I'm looking forward to learning more about the disease from you. But you mentioned in the book that you started out journaling, and at some point you realized that other people could benefit from the information. What was that pivotal moment that told you you needed to turn it into a book?
Actually, I was, my wife has been encouraging me to do that as well, because I was kind of really writing for therapeutic reasons initially. Mm-hmm. And she started to read some of it, and she said, I think you need to turn this into a book. And other people encouraged me to do the same thing. But I was praying about it, and basically God said he wanted me to write this. And so he said, if I write it, he'll bless it. And so that's what I did. I just wrote it. And didn't know what I was doing initially, just kind of was playing with different organizational structures about how to organize the book. And well, organized the book is I have the different titles, there's 21 chapters, and those 21 chapters, each one of the stories have a epilogue, or we call a quote, by someone like a celebrity or someone famous, mm-hmm. like a Whoopi Goldberg or Bill Cosby or Bette Midler or mm-hmm. Betty White, and then I go into the story about what the challenge is. Like, I have one story that's called It's Just My Imagination Running Away With Me. That's an old Temptation song. Then I go into this quote from Whoopi Goldberg that mm-hmm. says, normal is just a cycle in the washing machine. And after that, I go into the story about hallucination, delusion, and paranoia. And I describe what that looks like in my mother's life. And I share what some of her hallucinations, what they are, and I share what some of her delusions are and paranoia. And then following that is what I call scripture help. And so it's from the Bible, NIV version, and let people know that this is here to help you, the scripture. Then I follow it with a prayer, and the prayer is always a corporate prayer, always praying for the sufferer and the caregiver. And so that's how every story is structured. The first story and the last story, so that's chapter 1 and chapter 21, they are both in my mother's voice. So it's like her, she's speaking and saying what her day is like and what she goes through on a day-to-day basis with this disease. And all the chapters in between are in my voice sharing what I observe. Observing what some of her challenges are. That's pretty much how the book is structured.
Yes, and the prayers are beautiful, and the scripture, I'm sure, is very helpful. I do know one person whose wife has it very young, only about 48 years old, and I can feel his pain and his loneliness. So I think I'm glad you heeded the call from God to write this down and publish it. I'm sure it will help many people, and I'm sure you're going to get immensely positive feedback. And just putting this together, I've gotten through several chapters, and I have to tell you, I had a lump in my throat. I was kind of falling in love with your mother and her character and her strength and her everything about her is just so strong. And then even though I don't know her, you wrote it so well and in such a unique voice that as you get to see what this is doing to her, it breaks your heart. But there had to be some challenges in bringing this to life. I'm sure you had to do a lot of research, psychological challenges as you sat and said, okay, this is the situation. What were some of those challenges that you faced in dealing with caring for her, getting the book together?
The biggest challenge is just trying to figure out, for me, research wasn't a big deal. For me, it wasn't, because I've done research before. After doing a dissertation, you get real familiar how to do research.
Sure.
The biggest challenge is just really trying to figure out how to do this thing respectfully. And when I say this, is that one of the things about Alzheimer's, the disease itself, it has a way of taking a person's dignity away from them. And what I was trying to figure out as I wrote this and as I really prayed about how to write this, I want God to show me, how can I write this and really be true to what is really happening to her, but at the same time not to take her dignity away from her.
Or humiliate, yes, of course.
So that's what I was... That was my greatest challenge, and I really wanted the story to focus on really just my mother and my grief. I wanted to show what my grief looked like. I think that's important. I think one of the biggest challenges with being an adult child and having this woman I admired all my life, and especially being a son, because it's always that special relationship that a mother and son has.
Absolutely.
You know, I wanted to exhibit, you know, how strong the relationship really was and how much I just really care and love for her as well. And I wanted to show that I wanted people to somehow experience or at least feel my grief. And so that was probably the biggest challenge. Like, how do you say this and have people walk away feeling as though that they're not just reading the story, that they become part of the story.
Right. That's
how
I felt.
What I really wanted to do.
I really felt that I got to know you. I got to know your parents, your extended family members. What has their reaction been to the book and finding out about your experience of caring for your mother?
The reaction's been pretty mixed. Some family members are elated. some family members are not. So let's be honest about it. I don't want to give any fictitious realities about it. But I think some people, it's too close for home for them. They're not there yet. They're still in denial, or and they're not in the place where they can just move forward with this. So, but others have been just, they elated. They just think it's, I've done a beautiful job in, you know, providing a wonderful tribute to my mother. I mean, I got another aunt, my mother's oldest sister. She has two sisters. Mm-hmm. Her oldest sister has Alzheimer's as well. She's been diagnosed.
Oh, no.
And she has 10 children. And she has 3 sets of twins and 4 single births. And so that's a large family.
Yeah, it sure is.
And so it's been very challenging for them to get all of you on the same page. And so the one that's the primary caregiver, that's her daughter, Paula. She has a twin brother named Paul. Paula, she was there. She gets it. She goes through it every day with the dementia and all the other symptoms that come with the Alzheimer's. But her brother, her twin brother, he wasn't there. And so it was just a conflict with them. But the one thing that happened was that when I wrote the book and y'all got a chance to read it, then he got it.
Oh, okay.
And so he became a bigger supporter for her. And what's happened, when people start to get it, then they become better supporters of the of the sufferer and the caregiver, the primary caregiver.
And that's what's so beautiful about the book, is that it's written from a man's perspective. And, you know, statistics would show you that women generally become the caregiver, as in your cousin's case. And a lot of people don't know what to do or what to say or what's needed. And I think this might bridge the gap for a lot of people. If they're crying out for help taking care of someone, maybe they can just put your book in their hands and say, this is how I feel.
Exactly.
Might help.
That's what's been happening. What I've been seeing happen is people, as this book begins to get more traction in the marketplace, and some of the feedback I'm getting is it's even more interesting. I've had a few book signings, and what's happening, some people don't think they can get the book from the store, so you can buy it at Amazon online or get it at Barnes & Noble in the actual store. If it's not in the store, they'll order it for you. However, there's one lady, she was following me. She found out I was doing another book signing, so she came to the book signing, and she bought 4 more books because she wanted to pass them out to family members to let them read it.
Wow.
And so instead of trying to tell them what this is about and what's going on, it was just simple for her to go buy the book and say, here, this is what I'm going through.
It's a real wake-up call. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it's a very challenging disease. And the thing about it, I have one caregiver. She bought a hardback copy of it, and she keeps it in her purse.
Really?
And she said no one can borrow her book or read her book, because she uses her book for those moments when she's stressed or not having a great day with her loved one.
Yeah.
And so and she relies heavily on the prayers and the scriptures.
Yeah, beautifully written prayers and scripture is always good, but you really found the perfect ones to go with each chapter, and it's just amazing because she's so intelligent and strong and growing up in the 50s and 60s, that couldn't have been easy in the South. So you really there's so many levels to relate. But what I really found interesting was the cover. I noticed on the cover, it's her, a depiction of her, but she's sitting in front of, a dress, the dresser in your room, and it's got a trifold mirror, but I noticed in each mirror is a different image. Describe what's going on on the cover with those different images of her reflection.
Yes, I have a chapter in the book called Mirror, Mirror, Mirror.
Uh-huh.
Mirror, 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 the three mirrors. And what was going on with my mother, I would come to my parents' house, and I'd go in the bedroom where she's at, and, you know, and at this progression of disease, she knew who I was, and so she called my name, we was talking, and she was saying, that woman's in the bathroom again. And so she leads me into the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
I go in there, and she points at the mirror, and it's her reflection. And she said, that's that woman I keep, that's always in here when I come in here.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, Mama, that's your reflection. And she would say, and I would show her my reflection in the mirror, and then her response would be, what kind of mirror is this? It shows my reflection, your reflection, and not my reflection. What kind of trick mirror you ought to put in this house? Or, you know, she's
mm-hmm.
funny like this. She got this great, wonderful sense of humor.
Uh-huh.
Even with, you know. And so I thought about it. I was puzzled by this. And as I started to do my research on the disease, what's really happening is that the first thing to go is your short-term memory. And so you have your short-term memory and you have your long-term memory.
Right.
And what happens, that's a process that happens that moves information from your short-term to your long-term. And what had happened with her is that process had broken. It didn't work anymore. I mean, sometimes it did, but most of the time it didn't anymore. It was going toward not working at all. So what was happening is that she may remember herself maybe as a child in her 20s, in her 40s, but she could never remember what she looks like in the present because she could never retain enough of that memory to go to a long-term memory so she can record what she looks like today.
Right.
So that's how I came up with this book cover, this illustration. You know, with the lady that's like in her late 60s looking into a mirror and seeing herself as a child in her 20s or as a, you know, as a mature adult in her 40s or 50s.
Right. Well, I think it's a brilliant idea, especially with this topic. And how difficult is it to get to a diagnosis? Were there signs? And, like, did she, like, what little I know about it, most people try to deny it and they come up with tricks to help themselves remember and they're embarrassed and they don't want to tell their families. Did she do that as well?
Oh, my God, my mother. Oh, boy.
She's
a proud woman,
so I can see her not wanting to burden you guys.
She knew something was happening, but she didn't know what it was. And so I think she just went to a doctor initially and on her own and they diagnosed her with depression.
Okay.
And a lot of times, Alzheimer's is misdiagnosed with depression, like being clinical depressed. And
okay.
So they prescribed her Lexapro. I think it was Lexapro they prescribed to her, and that didn't work. That made it, I mean, it wasn't depression, but that medication was making her lucid. And so she was like, I can't take this anymore.
Okay.
And so I think she just, for the most part, she just kind of, like, struggled with it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I reflect back on what was happening at the time, when I reflect back now, there were little things that were happening. I remember once I come to my mom's house one day, and I was kind of suspecting something wasn't quite right. And so, because she's really great in, like, covering things up.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the house and I saw her with all these little post-it notes, little sticky notes, and she had all her seasonings out because she's a great cook, all her seasonings out on the table, and she had wrote the name of every seasoning on the sticky note. And what really struck me by surprise is when she had put a sticky note on salt and a sticky note on pepper.
Mm.
And, you know, that's like we just know what salt and pepper is because by looking at, you know, salt is white and pepper is black.
Yeah.
So, and so when I questioned her about that, Oh, she's. I'm just, you know, she said, you know, I'm bored, I had nothing to do, I'm just chilling around. And it kind of brought me back to this one movie I had watched with Tyler Perry, and mm-hmm. I think it was Kathy Bateman was a star, and she had Alzheimer's, and she had put sticky notes on all her medication.
I saw that. So, and in the movie, her name was Charlotte, actually.
Okay,
and
it was
Alfre, wasn't it Alfre Woodard was her best friend?
Exactly, that's it.
Yeah, I love Alfre Woodard. I love Kathy Bateman. Yeah, her name was Charlotte in the movie, and I remember the notes. Yeah, go ahead.
And so, it kind of gave me a deja vu to that, and I just, there was other situations that were happening with my mother as well. She wanted my kids a lot. I have a set of twins, and they love their grandmother, and so she always wanted them on the weekends, and what she was doing, she was using them like as a GPS. If she wanted to go somewhere, she had them with her to tell her how to get back home. And so she was doing things like that. It was just a lot of things. And then one thing that happened, I remember one time, I'll never forget this. We always went to my mom's house for, like, Sunday dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And so my family would come over, and my sister family would come over, and all the grandkids. And we had this big, you know, Southern family, like, soul food dinner every Sunday.
Sounds delicious.
And so my mom, she had told me, we were all in the dining room, and she said, go and get the cornbread out the oven.
Uh-huh.
And so I go to the oven, and I go to get the cornbread, and the oven's not even on.
Oh, no.
So I said, Mama, there's no cornbread in the oven. And she said, well, maybe I didn't make any. There's something to get the sweet tea out the refrigerator. So I go in there to get the sweet tea, and I see the cornbread, uncooked cornbread, in the refrigerator.
Oh.
And then I said, that's, she made a joke out of it afterwards.
Okay.
And we all laughed about it. And we went ahead and turned the oven on and baked the cornbread. But then we started to eat the food, and the food started tasting interesting. It was like she was putting seasonings that did not go together.
Oh.
And so,
wow.
So a lot of things were just happening. We just, I would say when she got diagnosed, it wasn't her diagnosis. It was really our denial day had ended.
Yeah.
Because we saw many things that, you know, that didn't add up for like for a great length of time. And we just ignored it.
Yeah. Well, these are rather minor. It's not like she got in her car, drove somewhere, and didn't know how to find her way home. Did anything like that ever happen?
That happened, and cause my dad had said one time, he said it took her. She supposed to be home at a certain time, and she wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked her what happened. She said, "I got lost." And he asked where she was going, and I think she was going to the hairdresser, but she had ended somewhere like maybe 40 or 50 miles away. But she got back home, but she got home so late.
Really late, yes.
Really late, and she found her way back home. But it was just, you know, what really happened when my dad retired. And when after he retired and he was here with her every day, 24/7, then he started to see it.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
wow.
And so she kind of hid behind the fact that it was no one around her 24/7 for a long time.
Right.
And that's why it went on for so long before she was diagnosed.
Right. Wow. And then how's your dad holding up through all of this? Is he coping? Are you supporting each other, I assume? How does he feel
he's
about
coping.
The book?
He's doing very well now with it. You know, initially it was a roller coaster ride, emotional roller coaster, because when she was in the earlier stages of it, oh my God, it was just a lot of things that happened. You got the hallucinations, and we had to do things like the one thing that was happening with the hallucinations is that she looked at a picture, and the picture would start talking to her.
Oh.
So we had.
Is that normal for this disease?
It happens. I'm not gonna say I don't know what normal is, but it happens.
Okay.
And so we had to take all the pictures down in the house. And my mother had a ton of pictures. I mean, and when I say pictures, I mean you may go into the living room and you don't even see a wall. All you see is pictures.
Right. But with a full life like she had and all this large extended family, yeah, I could see, you know, plenty of pictures around. It's
yeah,
just
I mean,
a shame that they started talking to her.
Yeah, they start talking. Statues start talking to her, and so that's why we had to. I got a chapter in the book called Safe House, and so that was part of the process of the safe house and make the house safe for my parents.
Okay.
I would often say the house went from like the Kool-Aid house to being Amityville Horror. Because then when I was growing up, we had the cool house, the Kool-Aid. I mean, everyone came to my parents' house, and it was a house where you know, ate and had fun and,
yeah,
you know,
socialized.
Enjoyed yourself. My parents, they were very social people. So anytime family came from out of town, they would always stay with my parents. There were other extended family in town, but the house they always wanted to stay, the person they wanted to stay with all the time was my mother.
Yeah.
Because she was so much fun, and she loved to cook, and she was an excellent cook, and she's a jazzy dresser, and
sharp, huh?
And she just real sharp, and she just loved to dance. She loved to have fun, and she just made that. She made your stay just be fun.
Well, it sounds like you must have had quite the childhood then. What was am I getting this correctly that you had a really wonderful childhood because of her and your dad?
Oh yeah, we had a wonderful childhood. I talk about that all the time. It's like my mom was like June Cleaver on Leave It to Beaver.
Okay.
I mean, she's the person that would sit there and you see June Cleaver with the high heels on.
Yeah.
That's my mother.
Hair all perfect.
Yeah. 3-inch heels. She even had a pair of gym shoes that were, we go to the amusement park, Six Flags, and she had found a pair of heels that looked like gym shoes, like sneakers.
I remember.
And she
wore
those
came out.
Heels. Yeah, she wore those heels to the amusement park, and it was so funny because I mean she was very petite, and so all her nieces always remember her, you know, with that hourglass figure and those high heel shoes. That was her trademark: hourglass figure and the high heel shoes.
Just to impress.
Yeah, she just, she came to Mississippi because we were from Mississippi, and we were like glad to visit family, and you would think that a movie star had landed. I mean, everyone wanted to see my mother. Like, they see me downtown, my uncles or something, they'll know she's there, and everybody just piling up over my grandmother's house to see my mother.
Right. And she was a teacher for a lot of years? Sounds like she loves kids, and so she was a teacher?
Yeah, she was a teacher for, her whole entire career. Because she had got her degree in business education. And so she taught typing for a number of years, She taught business education classes.
Okay.
At the technical high school. And she loved teaching. She was involved with Girl Scouts. She's involved with debutante balls. I mean, anything that was about youth and, you know, and also helping young ladies become, you know, ladies.
Yes.
I mean, she was involved with that.
Excellent. And what do you think you learned most from writing this book about yourself or about your mom? What is the big lesson in it for you?
I think there's a lot of lessons in this. I think the biggest lesson is I learned how strong she was. And I learned how, you don't realize this, but I just kind of really learned how much she gave, how big her heart was. She had a very big heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so, And so I just admire her for that. And, you know, and she was like the matriarch of the family.
Yeah.
She really kept a lot of, she had a lot of influence in the family, a lot of influence. And so, and you don't really see how much influence she really was until she acquired this Alzheimer's. And so as she,
right.
and so you, as it progressed, you kind of see how her influence declined and,
mm-hmm.
And so you just didn't know how influential she really was in the family. The other thing I think I learned was just the transformation of my faith. You know, I had to really, as I grieved my mother's progression of the disease, it just as it progressed, my anger and my denial and frustration, it progressed.
Right.
And so I had to really figure out how could I get to a healthier place.
Right.
And I was able to do that through my faith. And I just think that I started to learn some strengths I didn't know I had. And that was one of the things I've learned, that my strengths, I'm strong like she is. I didn't know that. So I'm a lot like she is. I didn't know that either.
Okay.
So we're a lot alike. We're similar. I'm the guy. She's a female. So I think
no
that's
doubt.
The difference right there.
But she's so strong. Yes, you're going to emulate her. You know, someone with that strength. And you know, there is that special mother-son bond. So it must have been excruciatingly painful to get a diagnosis like this. And then to learn what will take place over not a short period of time, but a long period of time. Many people call Alzheimer's, I think you say it in your book, it's like the long goodbye. And it feels like torture. I feel so bad. But what can you inspire our listeners to incorporate into their thinking or their emotional structure to try to cope?
There's a quote that I love by Alex Haley. I love quotes.
Mm.
And he says, find the good in everything and praise it. Okay. So I think with the Alzheimer's, you know, you can't look at all the bad that comes with it. You got to look at some of the good. And you probably ask them, what's the good in it? But
it will probably bring into focus a lot of the memories you cherish, no doubt. And having to relive those to tell your mom, do you reminisce with your mother and say, when this happened, do you do those types of things?
I don't hear you, Charlotte.
Oh.
Oh, something happened.
Can you hear me now?
You said something. I hear you now. Yeah, I hear you.
I asked if you reminisce with your mom. Like, I thought, you know, what is the good? And perhaps, you know, with any difficult situation, God's going to bring good out of it. So perhaps one angle of the good is in having to remember for your mother helps you remember and really brings home how much you cherish from your life in your childhood and having such a wonderful parent like her and like your dad. So do you reminisce with your mom and say, and this happened, that happened, and kind of take her through her memory to entertain her? Does anything like that take place?
Yeah, I do. I got a story about it. It's called Sometimes You Have to Cry, and it was a story in there about my dad. My mother having this, she was having this crying spell, and it was driving him just like insane. He didn't know what to do about it. And so I came over, and I gave him a break, and I just started sharing with her this about her life, all the stories she used to always tell me. And then another thing, I brought her to her seat at the table, at the kitchen table, because she always told us stories from the kitchen table.
Okay.
And it's only four of us in our family. It's my mother and my father and my dad and my mother and my father and my sister, and it's myself. And
uh-huh.
She always sat at, I'm trying to, she always sat like at 2 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
My mother did. And so I would always just, I sat in her position at the table. where she always sat, because we always had assigned seats. Mm-hmm. And so when I brought her back to that seat, that kind of that calmed her down. And then instead of her telling me a story, I began telling her a story.
Okay.
And that calmed her down, and she started listening. And so I just shared a story about, you know, how she grew up, and she just listened so attentively, like I would when I was younger. I would listen to everything she would tell me. And I think the thing, I didn't know I was doing this either, but I studied my mother my whole life, and so I just knew so many things about her. And so many of the stories she shared, she told like over and over and over and over. And so I shared some of those stories in the book, and sometimes I believe she told them over and over because she wanted us to know these stories so we can share those stories with, you know, with our children.
Sure.
And I've done that. And so I do use storytelling is very good thing to use with people with Alzheimer's. And that's one, because what you want to do is when you have these anxiety attacks, what you're trying to do, you're trying to, like, distract them from whatever that's upsetting them and then take them to a different place.
Okay.
And so, you know, if you do your research, that's one of the things you should try to do is just do storytelling. And it don't even have to be, it can be their story or it can be a story about something funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then make them laugh.
Does it work? Is it difficult to get them out of that space and into a more harmonious space with a story? I mean, does it sometimes not work?
I haven't had a problem. I mean, I've done it a lot, and so my mother, sometimes I take her for a walk. I've taken her for a walk, and then I tell her a story. Or sometimes we just, she'd be in the bed, and I lay in the bed with her. Mm-hmm. And then we just start laughing at each other. I start laughing. She said, "What you laughing at?" I said, "I'm laughing at you." And then she said, "Why?" I said, "Because you're funny." Then she said that, and she started laughing and said, "You're funny." And we go back and forth just laughing.
And
so we do stuff like
that. A little
bit
of laughter therapy. That's good.
Or I do something like comb her hair. And she likes me playing her hair. And so I comb her. I got a daughter, so I had to learn how to you know, braid hair, and so I know how to do that. So I would just comb her hair and braid her hair, and she likes that.
Okay.
And then, I would just, massage her feet, put lotion on her feet, or lotion her arms, give like a little massage, and she likes that. She likes being pampered, so I would do things like that. So, sometimes I just read to her. I'll just read out loud to her, and I try to read, get the Bible and read that to her.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another thing I would do as well. Yeah, she enjoys that too, because she just sits there, she just listens.
Mm.
And then if I'm at my, and then sometimes I play piano too, so I will go and, play the piano for her, and she likes that because, I was growing up, I took piano lessons, and I play a lot, so.
Sure.
It kind of brings her back to, I guess, those times when we were, when I was like, practicing.
Yes.
And I would sometimes practice like 2 hours a day, which drove my dad crazy. He said, "Can you just stop playing for a little while?"
I used to play the violin, so I'm with you on that one. Are you her primary caregiver, or do you share the responsibilities with your dad and your sister?
My dad's a primary caregiver. I just support my dad. So I wasn't working for about 3 years, and so I was here a lot with my dad. Watching, helping my mother.
Okay.
I wasn't working. And that's when I was working my dissertation as well. I was unemployed and I was working on my doctorate. So I finished that. And while I was doing that at the same time, I was helping my dad and my mother. And so that was kind of probably the worst of it. Like I said, progresses, the disease does. And that's when she was having the hallucinations. And she had this other thing called sundowning. And sundown is when they just get really busy after 4 o'clock, and they just kind of just get turned to a different person.
Really?
It's like after 4 o'clock when the sun goes down, and what research says is that their biological clock is off, and so they may think it's morning, their body think it's morning, but it's really nighttime, and so. oftentimes my mother, what we would do, she loved books.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to be part of a book club, and she had all kind of books in her around the house. So she has one bookcase, and she would just go to the bookcase, and she would just pull books out and look like she's reading the book, and she would just put them back. And so she just pulling books off the shelf and putting them back and looking at them. And at the end of the night, I should say probably wee hours in the morning, when she just tuckered, she is tired, she'll finally go to bed. I mean, the bookcase all the books would be upside down, sideways. It was no order to them at all.
No order. Oh.
So,
it's probably such a compulsive habit for her. Like, I want to read a book, you know. I'm that way. I know a lot of voracious readers. And, you know, that's something to lose. You know, when you lose that, that's got to be, does she have, like, frequent fits of crying or confusion, like is described with a lot of patients?
Yes, she had that. She had the confusion, the crying, and I mean, she went through all of that, and that's when it was really hard, because it's so unpredictable. You don't know when, I mean, everything can be just fine, and then all of a sudden she's just crying, and then she could be angry about something. And you don't know what she's angry about. I don't think she knows either.
Does she even know what she's angry about?
No, but that's when you have to, like, you got to get into, you got to think ahead and start. That's when you start trying to find another distraction. So you got to try to distract her.
Right.
So that's the challenge right there. And I was always very successful in distracting her. That's one thing. That's the one thing I brought to the table. I was able to distract her. Cause we always had this connection,
right?
It's a challenge though, because when she get on a tangent and you're trying to stop her, I mean, you have to. You're going to have to figure out something quick. That's one of the reasons why we had to. I got one chapter called The Safe House, and one of the things we had to do was anything that could be used as a weapon, we had to put it up.
Okay.
So like things like brooms, knives, anything sharp.
Yeah.
We had to put it up because she may not know that it's really you. She may think it's somebody else attacking her.
Yeah.
And so, it's that kind of thing you got to be cautious of. So, I mean, and that's what I was saying earlier when you asked me about, you know, that's when I wasn't working. That's kind of the stage that she was in.
Oh.
So I helped my dad a lot going through.
It sounds
through
like God needed you there. You had to hold this together, this family.
Yeah, I remember it's one story in the book called Stranger in My House, and that's a story about my dad. He had called me because my mother had been fighting him, and I got to the house. And I just didn't know what was happening. I was really, really nervous because I never experienced that with her.
Right.
And so I got in the house, and the first thing I did, I just started praying. I just realized after, you know, I started to realize after having this journey with my mother, if I pray before I do something, it always came out better.
Okay.
So I started praying. I went in the house, and she was in the house, and she was fine. She was in my old room. She had, my mother had, like, she had a ton of clothes at the time. She's always been a snazzy dresser, so she had all these clothes, and she was playing in her closet, and she had all these outfits laying on top of her. And when I said a lot of outfits, it probably was about maybe 60 or 70 outfits laying on top of her.
That's a lot of outfits.
Right. I said, Mom, I said, you're going to suffocate. You can't, how are you going to breathe with all those clothes, you know, underneath, on top of you?
Right.
And so I got the clothes off of her, and she stood up, and she just said, I said, so, Mom, I heard you've been fighting. And she said, yeah, she said, this strange man was trying to touch me, and so I had to protect myself. And so I said, so how did this man look? And she said that he was light-skinned and he was young. So my father's like light, but he's not young. He's an old man. And so I'm trying to figure out who this person is. And so she walked in, she came down the hallway, walked in the living room, walked in the dining room, and she said, tell me all about what she did, how she punched him, and how she got him out of here. And so I was just going with the bit. And I said, well, Mom, I said, so she said the police came and got him. I asked, where is this person? Police came and got him. And so my dad came in the house. He thought it was safe. It was safe. She came in the house. And I said, so was this that man? And she said, no, that's an old man. That's a young man. And something like this, like trying to figure out, now, how did he go from being a young man to an old man? And then she started asking questions about, my dad's name is Norris. They call me Norris. I mean, I'm Norris Jr. She called him Norris. And she said, what's Norris at? And I said, he's right. I kept saying, he's right here, Mama. And she said, and she like ignored me. She said, I've been looking for him. I can't find him anywhere. And then she just kept, you know, kind of circling the room and kept telling me her story about this man she beat up. And then she looked at my dad and said, where you been? I've been looking for you.
She recognized him?
And she recognized him. She grabbed his hand, hugged him, and they went into the family room. They went to the family room together and sat down. And so, I mean, that's some of the challenges you have in this disease. It's like, they wander. They mentally wander. And so she had went somewhere else, and he went from being, you know, 60-something years old to being 20-something years old.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting. It's a ride. I mean, I'm not going to say. Some of it's funny, though, but a lot of it
you can make
late. Scared.
How long were your parents married, Nell?
What do you say, Charlotte?
How many years have your parents been married?
Oh, we've been married for, it'd be 50 years next year.
Oh, my goodness. I can't imagine a heartbreak of losing somebody like that. There are some challenges in my family, not Alzheimer's, something a little different, but someone close to me is not herself, you know. So there's a heartbreaking distance and a distance that's often excruciatingly difficult to reach in and try to pull them out there. And I'm glad you're successful with the distractive techniques. You know, I'm glad that that works and that you're so strong for your family. I imagine, are you there a lot during, you know, every week helping out? And here's my question. How important, is it the most important thing that you give caregivers a break and let them get away from the pressure or whatever they're feeling? How important is that?
That's very important. I think it's very important. My dad, he doesn't take as many breaks as he should be taking. He just doesn't. I'm trying to get him to go out of town. That Thanksgiving I was hearing about, that Thanksgiving day, he wasn't in St. Louis, so that's where we live, at St. Louis, Missouri. He was in Mississippi, visiting family down there. And I gave him a break that whole week. And so I kept my mother, like, from Wednesday to Sunday.
Okay.
And so I try to give him breaks and as much as I can. So I always give him, like, a length of time, you know, like for a vacation-type break. Of course, I give him breaks, you know, throughout the week when he wants to go get his haircut or, you know, do other things like that. But sometimes you just need that break where you, like, just separate from
couple
the environment
hours
altogether
or,
and go somewhere, go out of town. You just separate that way. We have other, you know, my aunt comes over and cousins come over and my sister comes over periodically and, you know, give him breaks. And so he can go out and, you know, go to the store and go. But usually when he goes out and go shopping or something, he's shopping for my mother. Because one of the things that he does do, he does keep her dressed the way that she would dress herself if she didn't have this disease.
Mm.
He really enjoys, you know, buying her nice things. Because for a long time, he would take her to get her hair done every week. And until she didn't like, you know, water. And it got to a point, one of the things that really bothered individuals with Alzheimer's is water. So at some point, you become afraid of water.
Really?
And so we had, yes. I got a chapter in a book called The Water. And
I really need
to
finish
her a bath. You're gonna give her a bath as a challenge. Washing her hair as a challenge. I remember once, probably the very last time she got her hair done, it was my dad. It was his 70th birthday, and we were having like a 70th birthday party for him. My dad's a twin. He got a twin sister named Nancy. So she was coming to St. Louis, and then we planned this big birthday party for the both of them.
Yeah.
And it was going to be this snazzy hotel. And so we had a live band all day. And my dad, he wanted my mom to be there. So we got her hair done. He bought her a beautiful outfit. But we knew she couldn't stay the entire time, but she can be there for a few hours, for a couple of hours.
Okay.
And so what I did with my dad, I took her to the get her hair done at the hairdresser.
Okay.
And I had to hold her hand the entire time so she'll let the lady do her hair.
Okay.
So it probably was the last time we had her hair done, you know, at the hairdresser. But it's the water. For some reason.
And just to imagine a woman so beautiful who probably getting her hair done was one of her favorite things, and that experience is now traumatic for her.
Exactly. Even taking a bath was traumatic. We give her a bath, and we were trying to find like a bath lady for a long time, and she just didn't like everybody. She didn't like anybody. And I think one of the things to me what seemed to happen with my mother is that her, you know, even as her Alzheimer's progressed, her spiritual awareness had increased. So it was like her discernment skills got to a whole new height.
That was her
protection mechanism. So what was happening, we would find people to give her a bath, and she didn't like those people. When I thought about it, I didn't like those people either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she was on point about not liking them, and I don't know, they didn't do anything to her, but it was a spirit about them. She didn't want that person around her for any length of time.
Yeah.
So we eventually found this one person, and my dad, it's so funny, in our family, give everybody nicknames. We call her the bath lady.
Okay.
And so my mother, she absolutely loves this woman. She adores her.
Okay.
And so for the last couple of years, we've had, her name is Shalanda. She's been the one that's her bath lady. And now she comes in, you know, every morning, and she comes in, get my mom out of bed, give her a bath.
Yep.
And give her breakfast. And so it takes a lot of stress off my dad.
Good. I'm glad she has that. I would absolutely recommend this book to anyone, not only for those sharing the same journey as you, Dr. Norris, but anyone who wants to gain a deeper, more compassionate understanding of the Alzheimer's, its effects, and especially its effects on caregivers, get this book. It is absolutely amazing. It's a wonderful story. We have about 5 or 6 minutes, Dr. Norris. Why don't you share with us, what are you working on right now, and then tell us where we can get your book, and are you going on other book signings? Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, I have a book signing in St. Louis. It's going to be it's at the University City Library in the St. Louis area. That's on September the 19th at 7 o'clock. There's going to be food, refreshments there. What's different about my book signings than most of them is that I have, like, special guests that come to the book signing, and they read excerpts from my book. And the way we do it, they read the chapter title, they read the quote, they read three or four paragraphs from the chapter, read the entire scripture help, and read the entire prayer. And so I have seven special guests to do that, and it really comes out to being like a prayer service, what it comes out to be, because I have a person that comes up and, you know, sing a song,
wow,
a spiritual song, and then we go into the program. And in addition, I have the Alzheimer's Association there. They're there to do a short presentation about the symptoms. Then I have the next book signing we'll have on the 19th of September. Uh-huh. I will have this one organization. It's called Place for Mom, and they have a lot of services they provide for individuals with Alzheimer's.
Right.
And so it turns into I'm like a prayer service.
Yeah, it sounds like you go to a book signing and church breaks out.
They've been very moving, the book signings.
That sounds so wonderfully thought out, really. Food, prayer, it's like having church.
It's like having church, and that's why I want the field to be, because what ends up happening, it becomes very moving, very emotional. And what happens, people really, they get healed. They start to heal from being a caregiver, because, I mean, it's a traumatic experience. And so once they become healed, you got some people that had loved ones already passed on with the disease.
Mm.
And the one of the things I've done in my storytelling, in my book, I kind of like explain why they have some of the behavior that they're having. And
right.
Oftentimes what happens, people think that the person doesn't like them anymore, that they're mad. And when they understand that it has nothing to do with that, it's just that they have a broken brain that's not working the way it used to work. It's malfunctioning. And
right.
Once they understand why they're doing some of the things that they're doing, then they take that burden off themselves. And you start to see people. I mean, when my last book signed, people were just they were crying, and people were controlling each other, they were holding each other, and
yeah,
it was just a very moving experience.
It sounds like but there's no map of the brain that we know where the wires are and how to reconnect them. There's nothing you can do, and that's got to be the most hopeless feeling in the world.
Yeah, it's a hopeless feeling. I think other things, when you find other people going through it. And they share what their thoughts are, what their grief looks
right.
like. There's comfort in that. And so sometimes you just don't forgive yourself for having some thoughts that you think you shouldn't have. And when you learn that other people having those same thoughts and that they're struggling like you were struggling, maybe worse than you were struggling, then you're like, wow,
yeah.
You know, I'm not a bad person for having those thoughts, or
yeah.
It was okay for me to have those thoughts because it's normal. And so I think that's what
sure.
we're trying. We're trying to find some normalcy in this disease, trying to normalize the situation. And
right.
I think just by having a dialogue and sharing normalizes the situation for the caregiver, particularly
yeah.
the caregiver. But I do want to share my that. So the book is it's on sale at Barnes & Noble online.
Mm-hmm.
And Barnes & Noble here in St. Louis, it's on the shelves here. I've heard it's on the shelves in other places. I just don't know because they don't give me that kind of feedback. You can also purchase the book at Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hearing that Family Christian have it. I know your Family Christian has it, and Christian Books has it. So, you know, if you just Google my name or the book, I mean, you'll find the book online
yeah.
somewhere.
Well, there
and
are links on my show page right to the book for you. So they don't have to look
right.
far. You know, anyone who's listening to the broadcast will see the links in the show description. Just go right there, purchase your book. Give it as a gift for someone who's caring for an Alzheimer's patient if you don't have anyone in your life, because it's really impactful, deeply profound, and very helpful. Out of the whole book, Dr. Norris, what is the most crucial message that you would want the readers to grasp from it?
The most crucial message, I'm not sure if it's a message or not, but my book is really about coping and caring. That's what it's really about. It's about coping and caring. And it's about just the purpose of the book is trying to keep the caregivers encouraged and just inspired to know what they're doing is good and to keep doing it.
Right.
And just know, I want them to also know that the key thing is just your source is God. That's got to be your source.
Right.
It can't be people. It has to be Him.
You have to rely on Him.
So that's what I had. I had to rely on Him because people are not always there, but He is always there. So maybe if I could have it say anything to anybody, just trust Him, trust God, and He would show up. I give you an example. This my mother's birthday was Thursday, and we had a family gathering, and a fish fry on Saturday. And so I was sitting down with my mother, with my grandbaby. I have a granddaughter that's 2 years old. She's 2 years old today, actually.
Ooh.
And I was sitting down with her.
Chloe,
yeah, with a K. K-H-L-O-E.
Cute.
And so I said, Chloe, I said, give Grandma a kiss. And so Chloe leaned her head over to my mother, and my mother kissed her on the forehead.
Oh.
Now, most of y'all may think it's not a big deal, but my mother, she's in stage 7 of the disease, and so she doesn't communicate hardly at all.
Right.
And because that's what she's in stage 7, it's progressed to the last stage of this disease. And when for her to kiss my granddaughter on the forehead, that was huge. Because that meant that she understood what we were saying, and she had a reaction for it. Because she don't talk anymore. My mama, she doesn't talk. She talk every once in a while. She'll say something, but it's so infrequent.
Right.
And for her to respond that way, and she did not only once, she did it twice. So that's just how God shows up. And you have to be open to that.
Yeah.
It's just been, if you read the book, you just see so many times of how God showed up in impossible situations. It was around my birthday, and I was struggling just with a lot of different things.
Okay.
And I just started talking to her, and she just grabbed me and hugged me and said, it's going to be all right.
Mm.
And I was like, how does she even, and it's like, how does she even know? How did she know that I was struggling like that?
She's your mother. She knows.
She knows. And so,
she just had a moment of lucidity and clarity.
Yes. And that's why I'm saying she just showed up. When I needed that mothering, she just showed up.
Uh-huh.
And it was huge. And
tiny
so those moments, are kind
huge
of
miracle. Yeah.
And those moments are huge. And so that's just, you know, that's when you know God is in it, because she's doing things that the doctors would say she can't do,
right,
or shouldn't be doing, but she does them anyway.
Right. Wow.
So, but a lot of those stories I share, they're in the book. I can talk all day long about it, but it's a lot of stories that are in there that talk about just the amazing grace that He has shown in my mom through this disease.
No doubt. Amen to that. Well, I thank you for spending time with us and sharing your experiences and your knowledge and for writing the book in the first place. It's teaching me a lot. I hope to be finished with it soon, and I'd be happy to write you a testimonial and recommend it to, you know, anybody who has even 10 degrees of familiarity with this. But I really appreciate you spending time with us, and I wish you much success with the book, and please keep in touch and let me know how she's doing, how your mom and your dad are doing.
I sure will.
Okay,
sure will.
Awesome. You're in my prayers. Your whole family's in my prayers, of course. And I hope that all of our listeners will go out and get the book. Give it as a gift, whether it's for any occasion, no reason at all, Christmas. But put this in the hands of someone who might need a little encouragement. And if you do know somebody who's caring for an Alzheimer's patient, know how important those breaks are. Go over and maybe see if you can entertain their loved one for just a few minutes to give them a little bit of a break. And I think that would, I think the Alzheimer patient would appreciate it, the caregiver, and I think God would appreciate it if we all tried to do this. Well, Dr. Norris, God bless
yes.
you. And
thank you.
Sending you love and prayers and strength to, because your journey is not over yet, sir. So you will be, like I said, in my prayers.
Thank you. Thank you, Charlotte. Thank you so
You're
much.
You're welcome. All right, everybody. That's our show for tonight. God bless and be at peace. Bye-bye.